Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
891.
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
Now, you've recently visited the Currency Creek Arboretum and we're going to have a chat about it in a moment.
I certainly have, and it's got open days this weekend, so we'll hear from Dr. Dean Nicole on what's there and what people can expect.
Wonderful. Now, call now to speak to Sophie. She is here and ready to take your calls on 1300 222 891. The text line for comments is 0467 922 891, and I have a couple of ABC gardening magazines to give away later in the program. Andrew has called in from Mile End. Good morning to you, Andrew.
Good morning.
Now, you've got a question re hydrangeas. Welcome.
That's good morning. I've got two old hydrangeas in the ground. They've been there for quite a while. Mm-hmm. How hard do I cut them back, and could I remove some of them and put them in a pot to save them? Because they're not in the right spot anymore and they're just getting barbecued with the summer heat. And
Okay. So, yes, you could have a go at moving them. How long do you reckon they've been in the ground? Are we talking 5 years or are we talking 20 years?
Oh, put a couple on the 20, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay, so really old hydrangeas, there is an element of risk with moving them, and if you were going to move them, I would wait till winter, till, you know, we've had really decent, you know, rains, opening rains, and then I would move them and I would prune them hard and I would say, you know what, I'm pruning you hard, I may not get as many flowers this first summer, I don't care, it's about your living. The other thing I would suggest you do as well is take cuttings. Because obviously those plants have been in for a while, you can't consider retrofitting some shade for them?
Oh, the camellias have grown in between them and around them. And
oh, okay.
It's too much competition, not for yep. water or anything like that, but no aesthetics, less aesthetics.
Okay, beautiful. Well, so, you know, gardens change over time. So if you've got a better spot to put them, I would certainly look at doing it, but I wouldn't do it now. I would wait, you know, if we'd had really decent autumn rains by the time you get to mid-April or towards the end of April, you could try then, but I would prune them hard, like a really hard winter prune. To overcome transplant shock and then get as much of the root system as you can. And in the meantime, you know, try and do some cuttings. If they've still got leaves on now, you could try and take some cuttings. If, you know, it ends up being winter, try and do some hardwood cuttings. But, yes, certainly try and strike them as well.
The hard prune, are you saying a third, a half off the ground?
Oh, okay. So I would say two-thirds off, so you're leaving a third. Okay.
Leaving
so,
the third. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, the sort of generally if you're – there's two different ways of pruning hydrangeas, but if you're only pruning off the flowered stems, you cut them down hard and that's right. What I'd cut the whole plant down hard. And obviously as much root system as you can, you know, next step is wherever you move them to, make sure you've improved the soil with compost and organic matter to hold on to moisture. So that's something you could actually start working on now so that when you move – your plants, they're going into prepared soil. Often what happens with people like me, you know, I've dug up a plant and I haven't really prepped the soil. So because you've got a couple of months before it's the best time to dig them up, I'd be prepping the soil now. So when they go in, they'll power away.
Will they be okay if I reduce the rootstock down and put it in a premium potting mix?
In a pot?
Yes.
How big is the pot?
I'll get the right size pot, but
but you know, they're really old plants. You want big pots. We're not talking 30 centimeter pots. We're talking 60 centimeters or more. You know, really, they're probably appropriate for almost a wine barrel size if they're that old.
Okay.
You know, so the reality is, if they're not thriving where they are, you've got nothing to lose. So, yes, you could put them in a pot, but obviously premium potting media. And then because they're hydrangeas, I'd actually be adding more, you know, compost or organic matter to help hold the moisture so that they don't dry out.
Thank you very much for that.
Thanks,
all the
Andrew.
Best for that, Andrew.
Yeah, I hope you have your beloved hydrangeas powering on well after your preparation. Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson with you on Talkback Gardening, and the Currency Creek Arboretum is open today and tomorrow from 9 until 4:30. There are free guided tours of up to 2 hours of the Arboretum by eucalypt expert and Arboretum curator and founder, Dr. Dean Nicole. Twice daily, 10 and 2. You need walking shoes and a hat. And Currency Creek Arboretum boasts the world's largest collection of eucalypt species, over 900 species and over 10,000 individual trees planted over 32 hectares. It really is somewhere great to go. I know you've been there recently, Sophie. So let's welcome Dr. Dean Nicole, founder of the Currency Creek Arboretum. He's got a few minutes before everybody starts arriving. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, Deb and Sophie.
Good morning. Now, your property is amazing. And how many years ago did you start planting it, Dean?
I first started planting trees here, I'm at the Arboretum now, in my teenage years, actually in 1993. So, what's that? That's over 30 years ago now. and have been planting eucalypts here every year since.
It's amazing because I hadn't been there for about, 20 years because I was pregnant with my twins when I last visited. And we filmed there in the last month, and it was fabulous to see some trees that have got, 30 years on them, to see the size and how magnificent they are. But it's an arboretum, Dean. So for people that don't quite understand the difference, say, between an arboretum and a park or a garden, tell us about that.
Yeah. An arboretum is essentially a zoo of living trees, and we've got a specialist eucalypt arboretum, so it's just eucalypts that we grow here. And you might think, well, eucalypts, they're all the same, but there's so much diversity in the group, and you can see that if you come down to the arboretum. A lot of them are the smaller growing shrubby or mallee species, and then you've got all different bark types. So it's sort of good to see them all growing together because you can really get an idea of the diversity in the group.
Absolutely. And recently at the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, I was talking to one of the growers that had supplied plants, and a lot of people are looking for small eucalypts for, a suburban backyard, and they're looking at the mallee species because they, not going to get too big. They're not going to become like a lemon-scented gum and harass the neighbourhood. But their beauty, the foliage, the flowers, the pod, the caps are amazing.
Yeah, and the good thing about them is they also bring in all the other biodiversity, whether it's birds or insects. So, having eucalypts in your garden, even if it's just a smaller growing mallee species, is really beneficial because you don't just have that plant, you have all the other stuff that goes with it.
Absolutely. And one of the things that you and I were talking about when we filmed is the effect of climate change on the different species, and some that we might expect are not faring so well with our harsher weather, if they were cooler climate. But there's been all sorts of things happening, hasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really interesting to see over the last 2 years we've had record low rainfall here at the Arboretum. And, I mean, the Arboretum really is all about research and education. So it's been interesting in a way to see how many species just haven't coped with the drier conditions, but it's also been a little bit depressing in a way. But at the same time, it's amazing that so many species will grow on the one site. Mm. So when you plant 800 odd different types of eucalypts in really dry conditions, we've had over 100 of them just drop dead, essentially. But that means that there's over 700 that have survived the dry conditions, and there's so many of them that are actually thriving, and flowering really well. When other things around them aren't doing very well at all. So a lot of it's all about getting the right species for the site, and that's the sort of research we do down here.
So when people come along to the open day and they come around on a tour with you, they're going to get another level of information than they would just by looking at the trees because, they're going to understand them better. What can they expect?
I think the biggest thing most people get out of doing a tour here is just seeing that there's so much diversity in the group. They're not all great big gum trees like the lemon-scented gum you mentioned or river red gums. There's so many of these smaller, unusual types. Some of them don't really look like eucalypts at all until you look closely at them. So that's one of the biggest things a lot of people get out of them or get out of coming to the Arboretum here. But really, you know, what we talk about and what we look at really depends on the group of people who are here at the time. And we all sort of exchange information and everybody gets something out of it, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And I did hear Deb say wear sensible walking shoes. The Arboretum has a few ups and a few downs.
Yeah, it's a pretty big property too. I mean, it's 32 yep. hectares, so you won't see everything. Yep. But the tours I do, although they can go for 2 hours, you can drop off at any stage. You can have a look around in your own time during this weekend. So, you know, we're very flexible and we'd like to keep it very informal. We have some seedlings of various unusual and rare species here available as well.
Wonderful.
Some people like to take something home. You know, one of the ones they can't, some of the species that they like the look of or they can't find in the mainstream nurseries. So, yeah, there's plenty to do here. The kids love it when they come down because, you know, there's different leaves and gum nuts and flowers that they can take home. So, yeah.
Well, Dean, registrations, bookings and tickets are not required. You simply turn up. So that's any time between 9 and 4 today or tomorrow, 4:30 I should say. But the tours with Dean are 10 o'clock in the morning and 2 p.m. in the afternoon. You might be going to get there for 10 this morning, but you can certainly get there for 2 o'clock if you'd like to. And you just meet at the Currency Creek Arboretum. It's about 1 hour's drive south of Adelaide. You follow the signs from Adelaide Place, which joins Alexandrina Road, the Goolwa to Strath Road, about 1.5 kilometres north of Currency Creek, 19 k's south of Ashbourne and about 26 k's south of Strath. So follow the signs, use your electronic ways to get there, but it sounds like a fantastic opportunity. Dean, before we let you go, just a question on the text line. Are dogs allowed at the Arboretum on a leash?
Yeah, they certainly are. Just keep in mind that other people might have pets on leashes as well, so there might be a bit of interaction between them, but yeah, there's no problem with that at all.
Okay.
And I should also say that we have these open days twice a year, so if you can't make it down this weekend, the next ones are scheduled for September, the 12th and 13th of September this year, and that you'll always see different things in flower anytime you come down because each species has a different flowering period.
Yeah. And also, you said that some of the eucalypts that you've planted are absolutely thriving in the drought conditions. Want to give us a couple of names of those? I'm sure people listening would love to know.
Yeah, it's really difficult to recommend a eucalypt species that is suitable for anybody in South Australia, for example, because it really depends on where they come from. But generally speaking, a lot of the mallee species from the mallee regions, so they grow naturally through the wheat, sheep, agricultural regions of southern Australia. A lot of them do really well throughout much of southern Australia and most of Adelaide. So some of my favourite species are ones like Eucalyptus tetraptera, the four-winged mallee. And anybody who knows that one will say, yeah, that's really good. It sort of has big, thick, fleshy leaves. It almost looks like a succulent.
Wow.
There's another one called Eucalyptus minarichi. That's an Indigenous Australian name. And that has really interesting bark, heart-shaped leaves. So even when it's not in flower, it's really interesting. And it's also extremely drought-tolerant. So these probably aren't names that most people have heard of, but they're ones that hopefully will become more familiar over time because we'll be growing more of them.
Okay. Now this texter says, is there anything that can be used for wobbly legged people at the Arboretum? I would say take your cane with you and preferably a person you can lean on. Would that be the best advice?
Yeah. And there's plenty of trees to lean on here as well.
Okay.
Where you park, you can look at a lot of the eucalypts within, you know, tens of metres of that. So, yeah, there's really something for everybody here. If you can't walk very far, then you can just have a look at the ones that are close to where you park. But if you're really keen, you know, you can spend all day here if you wanted to.
Yeah. Well, it's a super busy weekend for you, Dean, so we really appreciate you taking time out just before the gates open to talk to all of us this morning. So thanks for that, and I hope your open days go really well this weekend.
Thanks for that. No, I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Dean Nicol, founder and curator of the Currency Creek Arboretum. We're getting back to your text messages. We will get to your text messages, but we're getting to your calls, more importantly, on 1300 222 891 for Sophie in just a moment.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
891
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
The number is 1300 222 891. Let's go to Julie in Selix Beach. Good morning, Julie.
Hi there, how are you going?
Well, thank you. You've got a lime tree problem.
I have, and it's very sad because we planted three trees, the mandarine, the lime in the middle, and the royal gala at the end, and the leaves have just dropped, and what's left on there are curled up, and there's tiny little limes left on it, and normally it's just, you know, covered in foliage all the time, and yep. We have tons of lime, and I don't know why, all of a sudden, this has happened.
And how long's it been in?
Probably 5 years.
Oh, yeah. Really? Okay, so it's been really successful to date.
Oh, brilliant. Absolute brilliant tree. Always limes on it.
Okay. Yeah. So the thing I'm going to ask you, is there any chance it's dried out?
It could have possibly, but the other two trees are still going great, but I do water quite often.
So how do you water?
With sprinklers. We've got a sprinkler system.
Yeah. So if, you know, we had Barb from Kensington talk about the fact that she was wondering what was wrong with one of her plants, and it turns out the sprinkler system wasn't working on that plant. So the first, you know, the most obvious thing sometimes is the cause, and that is, you know, when a plant in the warmer weather has shriveled leaves and small fruit, it's usually a lack of water. So whether the sprinkler system, you know, whether you can actually lift it up, make sure it doesn't have a split or something, which means that there's less water getting out at the point where your lime tree is, that would be the first thing I'd look at. The other thing I would look at, it's not near any big trees that it would be giving it competition.
No.
Okay. So I would actually check the irrigation and, you know, all you can do if a plant has dropped its leaves is trying to get those leaves back on. So, you know, even knock off all the fruit and, you know, make sure it's getting good deep waters around the whole root system and use a seaweed-based plant tonic. I mean, this is not a short-term response. It will take a while to come back, and obviously we're going into colder weather and citrus don't like colder weather, so I would just try that. As you know, the only other things you can think about, you know, does anyone use any herbicide nearby?
No, the like irrigation that? System is above the ground, you can see them watering, so
it is okay. That's weird. Well, look, I would just give it extra water and seaweed-based plant tonic and just look at it, monitor it over the next month. And if you start to see new shoots coming for some reason, I mean, it's not a dwarf and the others aren't full season, full size.
No, they're all, no.
Okay, because, for example, sometimes rootstocks, so dwarf rootstocks, for example, need a bit more TLC than normal rootstocks. So,
okay.
So that's not it.
So don't sort of cut the branches back or anything. Just take all the fruit off.
And just pick the water up and just see. We've still got a month where we could have warmer weather, warmish maybe. We don't quite know, do we? It feels pretty cool this morning. I know that. Just watch what happens, and if you start to get new little leaves start to come, you know, okay, for some reason that plant dried out a bit, you know, who knows why. Sometimes it can be really funny little microclimate things that can cause one plant to need more water than others, but I would certainly start with picking up the water and seaweed-based plant tonic, and fingers crossed.
Excellent. All right. I will keep my fingers crossed. I don't want to lose it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Julie. Yep, let's hope it's successful. Mary is in the Barossa. Hello, Mary.
I've got a very quick question for you, please, Sophie. A couple of weeks ago you were talking to somebody about options for garden paths that were natural, and I thought at the time this sounded fantastic. And of course, my aging brain has subsequently forgotten what it was you suggested. So, well, a very quick question, please.
Yeah. Can I say it's actually sawdust?
Sawdust. Okay.
I have used it in my previous garden in the veggie patch, and there's something beautifully soft and grounding about walking on it. And if you want to experience it, if you go into the Australian Native Rainforest Garden in the Adelaide Botanic Gardens, so it's under all the canopy of trees, and they've got sawdust on the paths, and it is, you know, there's something really soft and gentle and supporting about that. I mean, all paths support you, but if you're walking on gravel, it's sort of harsh. You know, if you're walking on, I think we're looking now, more people are looking at having softer surfaces, so when it does rain, the rain goes into the garden. But the sawdust is fantastic. I did used to put cardboard underneath it, but if you put a good layer of sawdust, you don't tend to find that you get weeds coming through from underneath. Plants can self-seed on the sawdust, but they're easy to pull out, and I would just top it up every now and again. Now, if you haven't got a ready access to sawdust, I would go and find a timber mill. You know, there are some in Adelaide, anyone that processes, or, you know, a woodworker, and they'll often have bags of sawdust or soft wood shavings that are beautiful and affordable.
Okay, thank you. Just one question. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
The issue with this path is that it is very much out in the open, so it gets, in the summer, gets very dry, and that's part of the problem with the getting dust everywhere. Will, you know, can you, how can you stop the sawdust drying out and getting blowing away? Would that just be I need to water that the same time I water the lawn?
I never found the sawdust blow away. And okay, well, Mount Barker was pretty windy. You know, it's interesting. At the garden show, not so much in the grand gardens because they're always, you know, huge.
Yes.
They tend to have more paving. But I did definitely notice that there were more unsealed paths. So whether they're compacted grit or something like that, so that the rain that falls gets into the ground. And I haven't found the sawdust blows away. I haven't used it out here at my new property yet because I'm not quite at that stage, and I haven't found a way of getting sawdust out here that's, let's say, affordable at scale. I didn't find that it blew away because over time it sort of meshes into itself and it, in time it breaks down, but that's actually adding organic matter to the soil at some point.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. Yes.
All the best, Mary.
Have a lovely walk down your garden path, Mary, your beautiful sawdust garden path. Marion is in Brighton with Amanda Villa question. Welcome, Marion.
Thank you for taking my call. Good morning, ladies. I've got a mandevilla that is about 2.5, 3 years old. It's in a 30-centimetre pot, and there's a climbing frame over it, which is about, goes up about 4 feet. The soil has become very low in the pot, and I think I need to put some more soil in from the bottom. It's going to be a two-person job, I think, to remove it. But the leaves are starting to go yellow now, and they're a bit spotted. So what do I do about that? And also, when do I trim it back and how much?
See, mandevillas are subtropical plants and they don't like the cold. So the fact that leaves are going yellow and spotted could just be that it started to get cold and they don't like it as much. So it's, I certainly wouldn't try and cut it back now because unless you've got an incredible microclimate, you know, like a semi-glass house, I still would be waiting until springtime to do that. So you've got a couple of options. If it was me, I would be inclined to leave it until springtime and then repot it then and then prune it. And then you're working with its natural rhythm, which is to grow in springtime. In the meantime, what I would be doing is getting some slow-release organic fertilizer, or actually some slow-release organic plant seaweed-based plant tonic, and putting it on the pot, which is going to break down, and then the plant can take that, and hopefully that will stop the yellowing. It's not standing in a saucer of water or anything, is it?
No, it's not.
Okay. And is it in a warm spot?
It's on a mobile trolley so that I can put it into warm spots, but I'm at Brighton and I get a lot of very heavy, strong sea winds, so I do have to move it, otherwise it blows over. So I am able to move it into warm spots during the day and then back into a more sheltered position at night.
Okay, well, so if you could put it somewhere where it's getting some radiant heat off walls, it's going to love you, and combine that with giving it an organic-based feed and something with some seaweed-based plant tonics, it's just going to stay. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to grow, but I think if you prune it, it's likely to sulk and it might even die back a bit. So if we were talking in February, let's say, or January, I'd say you got time to do it. But now the season has definitely turned. You know, you can feel the autumn chills. Yes. And even though we get the occasional warm day, the nights are getting cold. So I would hold off doing any major repotting and any major pruning until, you know, late September onwards as the weather is warming up.
So repot and then prune in late September.
Yeah, as the weather is warming up. I mean, I know 1st of September is the, you know, first day of spring, but it can still be quite cold. So, you know, I'd be waiting until you feel that spring warmth and you go, okay, the warm weather's here. So just because they're a subtropical plant and they don't particularly like winter, if you've got the right spot, they can be amazing, you know, in a sheltered, sunny microclimate, but I would be cautious about repotting it at the moment.
And it sounds like Marion's good at, you know, moving it around to make sure that it gets the best benefit.
Absolutely.
That's great. Good luck, Marion. We'll take more of your calls soon on 1300 222 891.
You're with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. Talk Back Gardening.
891.
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
Lovely to be with you on this Saturday morning, the last one of March, the last before the Easter weekend, the last before daylight savings end. If you're out in the garden this weekend and you'd like some advice from Sophie, call in now on 1300 222 891, and the text line for comments is 0467 922 891. Later in the program, I'll give away a couple of ABC Gardening magazines. In fact, Organic Gardener magazines. So if you'd like to get ready for that, please put your full name and postal address, and that would be really good. Now, you recommended a little earlier, Sophie, that we look at the issue of sawdust as paths, which I really love the idea of. In fact, I think you've used sawdust as paths in some of your Royal Adelaide show gardens. Would I be right in saying that?
Absolutely. I always use sawdust. Now, that sawdust, it's interesting. I'm looking at these texts coming through. We've had a great SMS from Francis in Normanville saying the sawdust forms a crust on top, which stops blowing away. We have it, no weeds, and soft and spongy. I love it too. Now, the sawdust I've always used is one that comes from the sawdust company in South Australia. So I've never gone to a woodworker. And we've got a really interesting text from Hugh, and he's brought up something that I should have said, because obviously if you're using something like wood shavings from permapine, you know, sawdust from permapine, that's copper, chromium and arsenic. So you don't really want any of that in your garden, and you certainly wouldn't want it in your veggie patch. You don't use permapine on your bed, so you wouldn't want that. And he's also said, make sure it doesn't include shavings or dust from composite materials, MDF. So definitely. And be mindful that some species aren't good for you or your lungs, like blackwood or walnut shavings may be toxic to horses.
Wow.
People that have horses get sawdust. They're probably the biggest users of sawdust, and they buy it from the big sawdust companies, and it comes in these giant sort of wool bales. And, you know, nurseries also use sawdust because it's coming into bare root season in winter, and nurseries get sawdust in to store their bare root plants. So really great point, Hugh. Thank you for reminding us of that. And, you know, permapine you might use in parts of your property, but don't go using the sawdust, you know, anywhere or the timber anywhere near your veggies.
Wonderful. Hugh in Port Elliot, thank you again for your excellent advice there. Let's head now to Valerie, who's in St. Peter's and got a problem that I think many people have at the moment. Welcome, Valerie.
Hello, Sophie.
Hi, how are you going? How can we help you?
I'm pretty good, but I've got two lemon trees which are both badly infected with gall wasp. The Lisbon, they're both over 50 years old. They're both quite old. The Lisbon is, I think it's dying. It's got dead branches on it, and I think it might have to go completely. But the Meyer lemon looks really good. It's got a good crop on it. It looks really healthy still, but got a lot of gall wasp. I believe you have to prune them right back to get rid of it. It's really all over it. It's really badly infected.
Yeah. So ideally, you cut the galls off.
Yes.
Or
but there's too many. There's really too many.
There's
to cut
too many.
Them off.
And can I say, you said the one of the trees is really old and is dying. You know, it may also have other things going wrong, like borers and all sorts of things like that. So really, the when you've got big old trees, you've got a decision. So the other thing you can do is you'll often hear people talk about using a spray of kaolin clay. So this is a super fine clay that puts a barrier so that the gall wasp doesn't lay its eggs, right?
Yes.
And so you put that on new spring growth. You know, it's actually a white colour. So, you know, if you're going to use kaolin clay and you've got a dark black fence right behind, cover that or you'll remember it. So it puts a barrier there. You know, there are other things people do is, you know, you can either, if you can't cut all the galls off, you could cut all the ones you can get to, and then you could smear the other ones with an what we call horticultural glue. You know, there's a bit of work in whatever you do.
So a friend told me they just cut theirs right back to sort of stump so that there was nothing left at all, and it is now, it is shooting, and hopefully it'll be okay.
So, well,
I
so
think,
if
I
if
mean,
they
I've been very neglectful
it.
And...
Yeah.
Sorry?
You know, if once it's smaller, then you can manage it better and you can make sure that it doesn't get a hold. So
would now be the right time to cut them back, right back?
I would think it's probably a little bit on the cold side to do that now. So whether you know, how much are you talking to cut it right back? How big is this
tree?
I'm
talking about cutting everything off, really, because it's so bad. I have been very, very neglectful of them.
I would be waiting, right? The wasps aren't going to emerge until sort of late October, November, okay? So if you prune them... you know, as the weather is warming up. Again, it's a bit like if we were talking back in January, February, you know, you've got warm weather for the plant to respond. Citrus don't necessarily like winter. So if you're pruning it really hard, it may not be as happy. Whereas if you wait till we're coming out of winter and prune it hard and then get on top with spraying, you're going to have better results.
Yes, so wait till about September.
I think that would be perfect. And then just understand that you are, you know, if you just prune it hard and it's got all this new growth and you haven't treated it, gall wasp will love you for it. So you've just got to then be proactive with after you prune, then to follow up.
Okay, I'll give that a try. That sounds good.
Yeah, and just stay tuned to us because we will let you know. At the moment, the gall wasps are just sitting in there. They're not doing anything, and it's really when they come out that you want to stop them from actually getting their eggs back into the tree.
Yeah.
Exactly. So stay tuned. Sophie will let you know when to do what on Talkback Gardening, and I'm sure you'll be able to knock the gall wasp off over a couple of seasons.
Oh, okay. That sounds hopeful.
I am hopeful. I've got to do the same with mine, Valerie. They were really good for ages and now I'm getting them back again. So I'll be listening with you for Sophie's advice.
Okay, thank you very
Thanks, Valerie. Appreciate the call. Phone number, if you'd like to get through to Sophie now, I've got some lines free on 1300 222 891. Jeff is in Mount Barker and you've got a citrus question. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning and thank you both. I'm going back into a garden in a house at Nairn that I left about 3 years ago. There are about 8 citrus trees, most varieties, and don't think any of them have been watered since I left.
So are they still alive, though? That's pretty impressive.
Well, they are, but there's dead wood in all of them, particularly the lemon and mandarins. And so really I'm looking for some advice on recovering them. I think they will all come back with water yep. on them over the last month. There's green shoots on everything, but there's lots beautiful. Of dead wood. Yep. They're in fairly light sandy soil. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm in your hands for advice.
Okay, so because you can get frost and cold and wet over winter, I think I would more or less say the same to you as I did to Valerie, that prune, but not yet. right. And in the meantime, cut out any dead wood that you can get to easily. And I would also start to feed them moving forward with organic based fertilizer, that you're sort of more or less putting a smorgasbord out there. So the plants, if they're a bit hungry and they're being neglected, they're going to start to take those nutrients. And come spring, following the rain, following, you know, getting nutrients accumulated into their system, come spring, they're going to power into new growth. And that's when I would go, okay, you know, now I've taken the dead wood out, I can see I need to prune this part of you. And so I would be doing that in spring. And it might even be a bit later than in Adelaide because, you know, it still can be quite cold till October in Nairn.
Yes,
it can. Mm. So, you know, the pruning might happen then as we're heading into the warmer weather, but certainly the recovery, you know, like you've probably had a bit of rain over the last month. So make sure that they, you know, the watering until the season breaks properly is consistent, and definitely organic based fertilizer designed for fruit trees, you know, organic based seaweed that's slow release, seaweed based plant tonics that's slow release will help to just pick them up. And then they'll be fabulous.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sophie.
Thanks. All the best with
that. Yeah, great call. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate that. If you would like to get straight through to Sophie, call now for advice on 1300 222 891. I have a couple of ABC Organic Gardener magazines to give away. If you've not won anything from the ABC in the last month and you'd like to win one, you can call Emma on 1300 222 891, or you can send your full name and postal address on the text line, which is 0467 922 891. Sophie, before we leave the issue of sawdust, someone is asking, is pine sawdust okay for mulch?
No. So sawdust is not something you use for mulch. This is a really great question. So mulch needs to be coarse because when you get showers and basically the rain falls, it'll go straight through the mulch. When you have something really fine, so sometimes people get confused and they use like a compost type product as mulch, that will actually dry your plants out. So you use sawdust on the paths, sawdust, you know, for something to walk on, for weed suppression on paths, and that's fabulous. But definitely it's not a mulch. So great question.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you very much for that. Your calls are very much wanted on 1300 222 891. We'll get to them in just a moment.
You're with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. Talk Back Gardening.
891.
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Ross is in Allgate. And Ross, you've got a question about eucalyptus trees. Hello.
Hi there, Deb and Sophie. Yes, I've got some natural growing eucalypts. They're only small, only about 2 or 3 years old, but they've got multiple trunks coming out from the base, and I'm just wondering whether or not I should prune away the smaller ones and just leave the stronger trunks to grow, so that when they get older, of course, you have a more solid tree.
Which type of eucalypts have you got?
Oh, good heavens, they're only naturally growing ones that have just popped up in the garden from trees
Okay. So most of the gums through your region of the Adelaide Hills are elegant trees with a single trunk, you know, and they form a tree shape. If you were out my part of the world, we have mallees, which have multiple trunks from the bottom, so therefore you would leave as many trunks as you can, and you let the tree sort it out for itself. But with what you're talking about, I would train them up a bit. You might leave a couple of trunks, but generally I would find if there's one that wants to be the leader, I would let it and remove the other branches to give it headway. I mean, the plant will sort it out for itself, but ultimately the trees that are growing around you tend to be a classic tree shape with a big trunk and branches, and that's probably the better way to go.
Yeah, well, that's good. One thing about sawdust, once you lay your sawdust and perhaps roll it lightly with a roller and then wet it, it does tend to stick together.
Yep.
So the lady who's worried about it blowing away wouldn't have any problems if she gives it a light watering and it will stick together if you roll it.
There you go. I've never rolled it. Thank you for that, Ross. I love that. I mean, do you love walking on it? Do you think it's a really nice path option?
Oh, yes, most certainly. It's a bit like walking on the rubber surfaces of the playgrounds that they put down.
It is. It's spongy and it's grounding and supports your nervous system. And, you know, I just think it's a wonderful thing. And if people have never seen sawdust paths, as I said before, head to the Australian Native Rainforest within the Adelaide Botanic Gardens. I mean, you should go there regularly anyway. But if you wander through there, it just gives this magical feel to the garden. And so I always used it in my veggie patches. And occasionally, I will say, some veggies did seed in there, but it's easy to dig them up and put them where you want.
Now, Deb, have you got a relative in Victoria with the same name as Todd?
I have not, that I'm aware of. No, we're outliers over here in SA. I know, but it's not a very common name. So I'm sure we'd have a link back somewhere.
No, well, I heard on the radio when I was travelling through Victoria, pardon me, last year, a bloke say his name, last name is Tribe, and I thought he was on an ABC channel.
Oh, I'll have to have a look. I'll have a look. That's really interesting. Thank you, Ross. Appreciate that. Then. Thanks. Ross from Allgate, thanks for calling in. The phone line 1300 222 891. Our magazine winners are Mary from Malvern, who is amazingly on the line with a question as well, and Shah from Kingscote. Congratulations to you both. Congratulations, Mary.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
How can we help you, Mary?
Look, it's about a citrus tree, and I think you must be fed up with citrus tree questions because I'm aware that, you know, you shouldn't really tamper with them at this time of the year and wait till September, but we were away for a few weeks in Queensland, and when I got back, this tree, which I got from a nursery, and it was already in a little bit of a, I'll never do this again, a dishevelled state, and I thought, oh, I can bring that back, and it was doing reasonably well because I've got it in full sun in a big pot. Whether or not I should just take it out and revamp the soil, I don't know, but certainly it looks like it's very, very... It's far too far gone to try and bring it back to any sort of existence. So, except there's a wonderful 10-inch or 3 or 4 shoots coming from the bottom, and I wondered if I could saw that off because it's about I'm 5'4" and it's up to my it's quite tall, up to my chin, so it's reasonably tall, but it means I'll be getting rid of the whole, that's a standard.
Yep.
Lemon. And I think that looks very, the bottom part that with these 3 or 4 shoots looks so healthy. Normally I would just chop them off. But because the tree is, I've been scraping their trunk while I've been waiting with a knife, and there's certainly not a drop of green anywhere. So I really feel it is dead. But I'm just wondering if I would just saw it off at the bottom, if it might take on again.
Okay. So your lemon tree is a grafted plant at that height, definitely. There are a couple of lemons, like lots of lemons that are cut and grown. They're not grafted, but at that height that would be a grafted tree. So I'd want to know whether those shoots are coming from below the graft or above. If they're coming from below the graft, that's the rootstock. So that's then a bit of a process. You have to let that grow on, just keep one and then graft it down the track. You might be better to cut your losses, but if you are, you know, you've done, you sound like you've done everything right. You've double checked, you've scratched the trunk. if it's dead above the graft, and you're 100% sure of that, it's not coming back. So right. The only thing you've got is the rootstock, and that then you've got to graft it, and that's a bit of a process. So, I mean, we all do this. I think we all, you know, go, oh, I'm a good gardener. You know, I can bring that sad-looking plant back. I'll often take, if it's a plant I want and it's rare, I'll take it even if it looks scrappy. But unless we, you know, plants in pots need watering daily, unless we really are careful about them and we know we're around, they're quite vulnerable until they come good. So good luck with that, Mary. Check out whether the growth is above the graft or below the graft. And if you're not sure, you're in Malvern, just take a photo, head along to the garden centre there, Brett won't be there today because he's busy judging at the show, at the Mount Barker show. But, you know, if you take it in, they'll be able to go, look, that's above the graft. That's good. That's got potential to come back, or it's below the graft. It's beyond it.
Okay, good luck with that, Mary, and congratulations on winning yourself an ABC Organic Gardener magazine. Sharon is in Harndorf. Sharon, you've got a question about autumn leaves and compost. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor, and hello, listeners. Hello, Sophie.
Hello, Sharon.
Hi. So, Sophie, beautiful Harndorf. We're looking glorious at the moment. Guys, everyone, come up and have a look. You know, you can find a park. Don't you worry. And it's worth the effort. But I, over the years, have gone with my very trusty sidekick gardener, Angelo, my husband, yep, and gone down and cleaned up the street and cleaned up the car parks by putting some of the leaves in garbage bags and attempting to compost them. Now, I do what it says, you know, but I just find it, they just, you know, 2 years and they're still not breaking down.
Okay.
So, we're very robust up here in this Germanic village, so maybe that's the problem, but
okay,
what do you suggest?
Because we're running out of time, Google leaf mold. It sounds dreadful, leaf mold. It's what you make out of autumn leaves. And yes, if you Google Sophie Thompson plus leaf mold, there'll probably be something I've written. The thing is, you need to have it in contained, like in about a 1 by 1 meter by 1 meter high space, and you make a leaf lasagna. So you put your leaves in, about a 30 centimeters of leaves. Then I'd put a sprinkling of organic fertilizer just to speed stuff up, another 30 centimeters of leaves. Keep layering it. Now, what will speed it up is when we get to the dry weather, you need to add water. The other thing that will speed it up is if you mow those leaves. So if you get them home, Angelo is going to be cursing me, if you get them home and you run the mower over them, you're chopping them up fine and then they break down quicker. So you can make leaf mold in a lot less time. Or the other thing, if you've got access to leaves, now some councils don't like you collecting them, so
well,
be aware of that.
Them. Don't tell
Sorry?
Them.
You're pretty well known, Sharon. So the thing is that if you can just store them by your normal compost for when you run out of dry materials next year. So basically there's not much nutrient left in the leaves, but there's a lot of cellulose, which is really important, and there's a lot of carbon. So if you simply have bags of leaves that you've stashed somewhere, when you run out of dry materials in your compost as the weather starts to warm up, you know, compost is that mixture of brown materials that are aged and dry and green materials that are fresh, use those leaves for the next couple of months. I actually might have cleaned the gutters near where I was renting, and when I came out here, I came out with wool bales full of leaves for my compost.
Okay, Sharon, thank you for the call. If we're very quick, we might fit Roslyn from Glenelg in. Roslyn, your leaves are curling on your mandarin tree.
They are. Hello, Deb and Sophie. I planted it last year, so I got it in winter and I planted it in October when
good,
the temperature of the ground was fine.
Oh, go you.
And then very soon after that, the leaves started curling. I'm not talking about leaf curl, I'm talking the leaves themselves. And so I looked it up and I gave it a little bit of fertiliser. So I fertilise a little often, like you tell.
Yep. Beautiful.
Like you tell us, I have sea-sold it.
Yep.
You know, I've done everything, but I've got some nice new leaves that are not curling. I'm just wondering if I should prune the curling leaves off.
No, don't worry about it. They're still photosynthesizing. There's a couple of things that can cause leaves to curl or roll. Lack of water is one. A citrus leaf miner can also cause them to do that. Sometimes even you'll get the orchard swallowtail that comes in and sort of rolls the leaf for the caterpillar to develop a beautiful butterfly that, you know, it eats citrus, but we don't worry about it because it doesn't do much damage. But I think you'll find that as the tree starts to put new growth on next springtime, you know, it'll be fine. It's obviously something that it responded to. You know, they can, if they dry out, they'll also roll too. So I wouldn't worry about it. Just you're doing everything right. If the new leaves are fine, that's what you're looking at.
Okay, that's lovely. Thank you so much, Sophie. I really appreciate your show, Sophie and Deb.
Oh, all the best, Roslyn.
Lovely, Roslyn. Yep, we've got Sophie here every Saturday morning from 8 until 9:30 and with Jason on a Sunday from 11 until 12. Just like to end on an SMS that we received from Mick in Kyneton, Sophie. It says, about 10 days ago, someone stole a number of wheelbarrows and garden equipment from the Nangawookan Native Garden. The thieves returned about a week later and stole more equipment. This equipment was largely funded by the efforts of the volunteers and is extremely disappointing to us. Is this how little respect volunteers are given now? Police and council have been notified. If anyone hears of cheap gardening equipment being sold around the Fleurieu, the police would be keen to hear about it. And certainly if you hear anything, call the local police. Thanks, Mick. Sorry to hear that. It's very disappointing, isn't it?
It is. And if people don't know Nangawooka, it is the most amazing native garden just down as you enter Victor Harbour, the vicinity, and, you know, please support them and by visiting and appreciating the effort they do. And as I say, if you hear about something being sold cheap that sounds a bit funny, get in touch with the cops.
Well, Sophie, have a great weekend doing all of the myriad jobs you've got around Shingleback Farm and look forward to catching you Easter weekend next weekend.
Sounds great, Deb. Happy gardening to all our listeners.